So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. The January 7 inauguration of Governor Tony Evers means Wisconsin I has been able to interview Governor Evers' new cabinet secretary. So I want to welcome Corrections Secretary Kevin A. Carr. Mr. Carr, welcome to Wisconsin I.
Good morning, Steve, and thank you for having me.
You had 38, almost 39 years in law enforcement. Can you summarize that quickly for us, sir?
I'd love to. I started with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office when I was 21 years old, working as a deputy. I spent 30 years in that organization, and I finished my last 8 years as the second in command of the largest agency in the state, Sheriff's Office in the state. During my time there, I held every rank except sheriff and worked in almost every division in the agency. In 2010, I was fortunate enough to be appointed to the position of U.S. Marshal for the Eastern District of Wisconsin by President Barack Obama. I served in that capacity until January of this year, mm-hmm. when I was given the chance of a lifetime by Governor Evers to be appointed to the position of Secretary of the Department of Corrections.
What was so, why did you accept Governor Evers' challenge?
I accepted the offer to be the Secretary of Corrections because Governor Evers' vision for criminal justice reform in this state is very compatible with mine. We both, in summary, believe that we've locked up too many people for too long with the outcomes not being what we want and for the cost that we're expending. So we're looking to implement criminal justice reforms that make sense, that keep the public safe, reduce costs, and achieve better outcomes. We really believe that by providing more treatment, skills training, drug rehab, housing, and other supports, that we can actually reduce the inmate population in this state by providing more resources to people. And it's all in concert with the governor's position of a Wisconsin for all of us.
Well, let's set the stage on your agency. In December, there were 23,637 adults in prison in Wisconsin. About 93% of them were male. The governor has submitted a budget under which your agency would get $1.2 billion a year over the biennium, or $2.4 billion, which is a great deal amount of money. And figures suggest that our system, our prison system, was designed for 17,000 inmates, and now we have about 23,000, so maybe we're 30% overcrowded. What do you consider the top challenge for your agency, Mr. Secretary?
Well, the top challenge for the Department of Corrections, as I see it at this point, is to, safely and responsibly reduce the inmate population in our facilities, and two, provide the programming and reentry programs that will help people be successful when they leave our facilities or while they're on supervision. Mm-hmm. All of that is going to involve criminal justice reform on a large scale, which has happened already in Washington with the First Step Act,
yes.
the federal legislation that was passed by Congress and signed by the President in December, that shows that criminal justice reform is a bipartisan issue that many people on both sides of the aisle can embrace. During my first 2 months as Secretary, I've met with many of the legislators in the Capitol who feel strongly that they want to participate in criminal justice reforms, not only to do the right thing for those in our care and to achieve better outcomes, but to lower the cost of incarceration and running the correctional facilities in our state.
It's intriguing to me when I look up, and I looked up the Legislative Fiscal Bureau report on your agency, which lays the groundwork for the budget considerations. And when you look at adult males, 3 out of every 4 were convicted of violent crimes, sex offenses, 32%, murder, 20.7%, robbery, 11.6%, assaults, 10.3%. I find that a very interesting stat. 74% of adult males, violent crimes. How do you focus rehabilitation on on that inmate population, many of whom, don't they, sir, have addiction problems and never completed high school? So how do you make some major changes?
Well, first of all, I think you have to look at a number of factors. One is that I think the science shows that a young person's brain development is ongoing up until their mid-20s. And although there's a segment of that population that's in custody, we have to provide them with those educational opportunities while in custody, the mental health services, the drug treatment. We have to provide a wide array of services from the beginning to the end of a person's time in our facility. Those are the things that I think are going to help us achieve better outcomes in the long run.
What I hear you saying is that those programs that you just outlined have not been given enough funding and attention by your agency in the past, sir?
Well, I believe that we could do better. We do have those programs in place, but you can always use more because the capacity is limited for participation in those programs in all of our facilities. There's more demand to participate in those programs as there is the capacity to meet the demand.
I want to talk to you about the DOC budget the governor just recommended. He recommended the addition of 1,200 beds, which would be the size of a pretty good-sized prison, but that doesn't amount to recommending a new prison for the state, correct, sir?
That's correct. Those beds are temporary beds. They are barracks that are designed to meet a temporary excess population need, and our intention is to only use them on a temporary basis, and then when they're no longer needed, dismantle them.
The group Wisdom, you know their goal. We think eventually we could reduce our 23,636 adults in prison by about half. Is that a reasonable goal, Mr. Carr?
Well, I believe that, first of all, it's an aspirational goal. I don't think that anyone would argue that if we could safely reduce our inmate population by any significant measure and reduce costs and have better outcomes and maintain a low crime rate, increase public safety, who's going to argue against those outcomes? No one. But the state of Minnesota, our next door neighbor, for instance, at one time had a prison population that mirrored ours. Currently, they have around 10,000 people in custody in their state facilities.
We have 23, they have 10,000.
Yeah, we have 23, or closer to 24,000, and
yes,
they have 10,000. We have 66,000 people on supervision. They have 100,000 people on supervision. They've just flipped the model on its head, and they are just as safe as we are, and the cost for running those facilities is significantly reduced. So, and it took Minnesota years to get there. It didn't happen overnight. So nobody is advocating that we open up the door and let 12,000 people out, you know, in a short period of time. Is this something that's aspirational, that at some point in the future we could attain that goal? Yeah, I believe it's possible. But it would take years to get there.
The campaign rhetoric leading up to the election of Governor Evers was pretty rough on that issue. You heard some of the Republicans say, if you dramatically reduce our adult inmate prison population, you're jeopardizing public safety. Can you answer those GOP arguments, sir?
Well, I thought my previous answer was alluding to the fact that, one, anytime, let me say it this way, Steve, the Department of Corrections will always be a public safety agency first. Every decision that we make has to be made through a public safety lens, where we decide release decisions based on what's going to increase public safety and what's in the best interest of the individual that we're considering. So before you decide to release someone, you should utilize all the tools and common sense that you have available to you. You use validated risk assessment tools, you look at the person's record, you look at all the other victim witness impacts, you look at everything that you can, and you put that all in the calculation in deciding whether or not a person should be released. And then that, in my opinion, is the most responsible way to go about it.
You'll have 2 months on the job here in a few days. Have you had a chance to visit very many of our prisons yet, sir?
Well, I've visited Lincoln Hills on two occasions, okay, the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, and I had a short visit at Dodge Correctional for a warden's meeting. So I'm planning on getting around to as many of the prisons as I can within the next few months.
What have you heard from the wardens in terms of their biggest concerns, these line item people who are out there managing these number of inmates?
Well, the largest concern that we have right now internally is a staffing problem. I have approximately 700 vacancies in the correctional officer rank as we speak.
700 out of how many, sir?
Out of about 7,000.
So 1 in 10 jobs is vacant.
That's correct.
Is that the reason that the governor's budget would raise the minimum hourly pay for a guard to about $18, Mr. Carr?
Well, that's part of it, because one of the things is that, one, the starting rate for a correctional officer currently is $16.32 an hour. Our unemployment rate in this state is at about 3%. So the competition for labor is extremely tough right now. Many of our locations have private businesses nearby that are paying starting wages at $20 an hour. So because of the staffing shortage that we currently have in many of our facilities, many of our employees are working a lot of overtime and missing time with their families in order to help us accomplish our mission. And I want to commend those employees for the tremendous job that they're doing under extremely difficult conditions. But we didn't get into this situation overnight. The staffing shortage of 700 positions or the low wages. We're not going to get out of that situation overnight either. I believe that the governor's recommended wage increase for my staff, the starting wage going to around $18 an hour, is a good first step in the right direction. There's no way that we're going to get up to an average that my office has determined that should be the starting pay of around $22 an hour, because we did a staffing study and measured what the surrounding states were paying their entry-level correctional officers, and that ended up being around $22 an hour.
You and the governor visited Lincoln Hills. The governor's budget says we just can't set a date to close it. What do you think, having been there, might be a reasonable, and you have Republican senators like Senator Van Wongard saying, no, you cannot have an indefinite date. What's a reasonable date to close Lincoln Hills, Mr. Secretary?
Well, the governor's budget, I believe it was misreported that he wanted an indefinite closing date.
What's a better term?
The term that's in the budget and that the governor and I have discussed is we will close Lincoln Hills whenever there is an acceptable location to place the youth. You can put whatever date you want in a piece of legislation, but if a building's not built and it's not ready to go, you can't put kids in it. Mm-hmm. And I have the governor's express commitment, and I 100% agree with him, that if we could close Lincoln Hills tomorrow because we had an acceptable place to put those kids, we'd do it tomorrow. So we are committed as an administration to close Lincoln Hills as soon as practically possible.
The governor's budget also recommends decriminalizing possession of 25 grams or less of marijuana. Do you think that would eventually contribute to the reduction in our prison population, sir?
To some extent, yes. Okay. But quite honestly, in this state, the first offense of possession of marijuana, if it's charged as a misdemeanor, people don't go to prison for that. Second offense is a felony if you possess marijuana in this state currently. You could go to prison for that, but people rarely do. Eventually, if you have additional offenses that are a felony, you could end up in prison. Oftentimes, the possession of marijuana charge is something that is along with some other felony charge that the person is sentenced on and ends up in one of our facilities. But the real issue for decriminalization of marijuana has to do with disparate impact in our urban cities. And the number of African-American youth that are routinely charged with this offense, and it impacts their ability to get jobs, housing, and it really impacts their life in a long-term way, as opposed to others in the general geographical area that you could be looking at.
The larger issue there is Wisconsin, unfortunately, leads the nation in the incarceration of African Americans. Do you see changing that as part of the mission of DOC, or is that in the area of the policymakers and the elected state officials, sir?
It's in everyone's area, not just DOC's or not just the electeds. It should be all of our concern.
Okay. And what do you think would be the best way to begin to address that?
I believe that if you provide more mental health, first of all, if you provide more mental health resources, drug treatment, job training in the community for people that are not necessarily in the system, okay, if there are more resources available for people to address their issues prior to coming into the criminal justice system, in addition to after they get in, I think you can start to turn the tide in that regard. So it takes cooperation at every level and all of us connecting the dots all along the way to try to work together to solve that problem.
The whole issue of crimeless revocations. Milwaukee legislators say this has a huge impact on their communities. Can you explain crimeless revocations? Because if the practice is changed, wouldn't that reduce the number of those that are out on community supervision being sent back to prison, sir?
Well, I think the crimeless revocation issue is complicated, and it's complicated for this reason. First of all, I have no doubt that there's a significant number of people who are revoked, who have only been revoked because they broke one of the Department of Corrections rules or regulations, mm-hmm. or they didn't cooperate with programs like drug treatment that they were supposed to participate in.
They knew the rules of being on community supervision and broke those rules.
Right. But, you know, and some of those rules, and I'm currently reviewing the crimeless revocation issue at DOC right now, but some of those rules, maybe they missed a meeting or they were disrespectful or they did something like that. People that need to be revoked should be revoked. But people that don't need to be revoked shouldn't be revoked. And we're going to look at the criteria that we use to make those decisions going forward into the future. But another complication of that issue is simply that there are many situations that are viewed as a crimeless revocation situation where a person who is on supervision is arrested for a new crime, and a prosecutor decides not to charge that person for that crime because they're on supervision and are going to be revoked. Mm-hmm. Okay, that doesn't mean it was a crimeless revocation. It just means you didn't get prosecuted for that crime. If you had not been on supervision, you probably would have been charged for that crime.
The fact that you're reviewing the issue of crimeless revocations, do you have a concern that there have been some abuses in that in the past, Mr. Secretary?
I don't necessarily consider them abuses. I believe that oftentimes people can start to perform their functions in a very bureaucratic way, where the rule is the rule, and if you break the rule, you do X. You know, life is more complicated than that, and I'm asking our folks to, you know, use their experience and wisdom and training to be a little more flexible in how they view certain violations.
My understanding of our prison population, almost 24,000, as you said. My understanding, I had a former assistant attorney general tell me this over the weekend, 3,000 of them are what's called old law prisoners. In other words, they're eligible for parole because they were sentenced and convicted prior to the three strikes. Do you think most of those 3,000 old law inmates, to use that term, should be paroled?
Well, you have to look at each individual on a case-by-case basis. To say that a whole entire category of individuals should be paroled would be, to me, foolhardy, because I have to look at every single one. I don't know for certain what their particular situation is. But should they all be considered and reviewed for parole eligibility?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. The issue of solitary confinement, so controversial. Former Corrections Secretary Ramish, when he was in Colorado, spent time in a solitary. Has Wisconsin prisons abused solitary confinement, sir?
First of all, I haven't had the opportunity to fully research how solitary or what they call restrictive housing or segregation has been used by the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. But I would say this. It has been used as a tool to manage the prison population, those that have been disruptive or broken rules or gotten violent or what have you. The governor and I feel that there are better management strategies that could be used to reduce the amount of segregation that is used in our facilities. And we intend to move forward in that direction as we do the research and implement new policies. If you take away a tool from your employees, you have to replace it with something that they can use in order to be more effective in managing our populations without the use of restrictive housing.
So are you also taking a look at our solitary confinement practices?
Absolutely.
One thing that has always intrigued me is two of our adult maximum security prisons were built in the 1800s, Waupun and Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recent report, I think I caught the story on public radio. Green Bay may need up to $500 million in repairs. Maybe that's not a number you're familiar with. But anyway, Green Bay has some major structural issues. Yet there's nothing in the governor's operating budget on Green Bay. Talk about the future of the Green Bay prison, because as you're well aware, some Republican legislators want that torn down and another prison built in northeast Wisconsin in Brown County. So the future of Green Bay?
Well, all I can tell you about that, Steve, is that there was a master facilities plan that was ordered by the Department of Administration back in 2017 at the direction of the legislature to assess the condition of all of our facilities throughout the state. That final plan should be released by the end of 2019.
Okay.
That plan is going to give us a real good indication about what the future of the Green Bay facility really is.
Yet, until that plan comes out and is implemented, which is another decision that elected officials will have to make, mm-hmm. you have to operate a Green Bay prison with major structural problems. How do you do that?
Well, the previous legislature authorized $25 million in funding to do some fundamental structural repairs at Green Bay to keep that facility operating for, you know, 5 years plus. That's
$25 million. Yeah. Will take a step.
It'll take a step, and it'll keep facility in a safe operating condition.
Would you ever consider using a private prison in Wisconsin to house our inmates?
Well, I personally am philosophically opposed to private prison building. It's all about money for them. It's not about the care that they provide for the people that reside there, in my opinion. I don't believe that. I believe the governor shares my opinion about that and is not has very little interest in building a new facility. You know, we're not looking to increase the number of beds in this state. We're looking to reduce them by being smart on criminal justice and corrections in this state.
You think it's possible within a 2 to 3 year window, which would be outside the next budget, to close a prison in Wisconsin, Mr. Carr?
I don't know if that could happen that fast. You're talking about between 1,000 and 2,000 people.
Yes.
You know, there are a number of reforms that could take place that may impact the population to a significant degree. I don't know to what degree yet, but these things take time, and you know, the governor is going to want to work with the legislature on coming up with those reforms, and that's going to take some time.
Governor Walker didn't issue any pardons. Do you expect Governor Evers to reestablish the pardon board as a functioning part of the criminal justice system?
I do.
Pretty soon?
Yes.
And do you expect a new chair of the parole commission to be named soon?
I do.
Boy, you give quick answers. I appreciate that. Recent report by Columbia University said the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, which you said you visited, should be closed. Agree?
I disagree.
Disagree. Why?
Well, first of all, I believe that, I agree with many of the concerns that have been voiced about the current physical structure at the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility in Milwaukee. I do agree that we can do a better job with ventilation and providing a more humane atmosphere. We can do more with programming. We can reduce the inmate population there. We can right-size that facility so that it functions not only in the way that it was designed, but better. It's a state asset. I don't know why we would consider just tearing it down when it could be repurposed in a way that provides significant value to the citizens of that community and the state.
Right now, as we've discussed, there is almost 24,000 adults in our prisons. At the end of the current budget cycle, in June of 2021, what do you think is a reasonable target for our adult prison population share? Do you have a number in mind?
No, I don't.
You don't. But you'd like to see that reduced?
Yes.
Yeah, but that wouldn't involve closing a prison?
Well, ideally, you know, Texas, for instance, mm-hmm. one of the reddest states in the country, right? They implemented criminal justice reforms over the last few years, and they were able to close 8 prisons and reduce the population and the cost by that much,
right,
by doing many of the things that the governor and I want to do. And who wouldn't want those types of outcomes?
I think taxpayers would find it very interesting. The cost right now, the annual cost for an adult inmate in one of our prisons, is it about $28,000? Am I low or am I high?
You're low. It's $32,000.
$32,000 to house one adult in a Wisconsin prison.
And $8,000 to put them on supervision.
$8,000 to put them on supervision. We have $66,000 on community supervision. Boy, thank you very much, Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Steve. It was my pleasure.
Good luck. You have a very challenging job, sir.
I'm looking forward to it, and I appreciate the governor giving me this opportunity to serve the citizens of this state in this capacity.
Thank you for the Newsmakers interview.
You bet.
Thank you.